This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you. There are men and women who, if you take the time to get to know them, you'll hear some incredible stories about the things they've done in the service of our country. We want to honor our veterans for their service, the sacrifices they've made. We want to preserve their stories so they're not forgotten, so we don't lose sight of the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we're all educated, we're entertained, and a lot of times we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. The young man we're going to meet today won't be 95 until February, and I think you'd have a hard time convincing folks at the post in Atwater that he is almost 95 years old. Very young at heart gentleman, Francisco Paredes, or as they know him around here, Frank. Tell me about your life growing up, Mescalero Apache in the Dragoon Mountains of Arizona, and how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had 8 brothers and 8 sisters. Most of them are gone. I only have 2 sisters left, no brothers.
What's it like to grow up in that big of a family? Because I think most of us don't know what it's like to be one of 16 kids, 4 or 5 maybe, but 16's a lot.
Well, it's kind of hard, you know, because at 16, I worked in the mines in Arizona, and that wasn't for me.
That copper mines or silver mines or what?
Copper mines. So anyway, I got hurt. I was 2,000 feet down a shaft, and I got hurt. And then the company found out that I was underage, so that I wouldn't sue them. They paid me off with $9,000, and that was a lot of money at the time.
Especially for a 16-year-old.
Right. So I got my mom and 2 of my sisters and 1, I guess, would be a niece. And we went to Mexico. This is some other family down there, you know. We stayed down there for about maybe 2 weeks. Then I came back, and then I told mom, I says, let's go to California. She said, what are you going to do in California? I says, sell everything you have, and I'll find you a place in California for you. So I did, you know, and we moved back to California, to Monterey, California. We stayed there for about maybe a year, and then she wanted to go back to Arizona. So I took her back, and then the second time when I brought her, I said, Mom, I says, I came after you. I want to take you to California. I want to set you up. Here's the bad news. I'm going to join the military. That's what I want to do. I was about 20 years old. So she said, okay, we'll go to California. So I got her set up. So I joined a tuna fishing fleet, Albacore Tuna, in South America, in Peru. So I did that, and I came back with a pretty good chunk of money. So then I told her, I said, okay, Mama, this is the deal. I'm setting you up. Now, here's the bad news. I'm going to join the military. So that's when I did. That was in September the 16th of 1941. I had to find something for me to do, something to be helpful. So that's what I did. I joined the military. They sent me to Hawaii. I was on my way to Manila to join the troops in Manila. So I was waiting in Pearl Harbor, Schofield Barracks, actually, on a cadre to go, waiting for more people to show up to go to Manila. But that's when I got caught, you know. Incidentally, a friend of mine, his name was Max Druin. He passed away about 6-7 months ago. He went in the Navy, and I went in the Army. He was aboard the USS West Virginia. I was in Schofield Barracks. So on Saturday night, December the 6th, I went to Pearl Harbor to visit with him, and we had a few beers, you know, and chatted, you know, about the hometown and this and that. I told Max, I says, I got to catch the last shuttle to Schofield Barracks. Otherwise, I'll be stranded here, you know, and I do help the priest say Mass on Sunday mornings. So I caught my shuttle, went back, and I made it okay. 8 o'clock, about 5 minutes to 8, I was on my way to church for Mass, and all of a sudden I heard a big noise, and the sirens went off, and they says, "This is not a drill, this is not a drill. All personnel report to your stations." I didn't have a station, but we did have machine guns set up, you know. So what I did, I manned the first machine gun that I could find, and it was a Twin 50 on a Heinz mount. I spotted this torpedo bomber. He was probably about maybe 150, 200 feet up in the air. I could see the pilot, and I took a burst at him, and I missed him. Then I gave him a lead, and then I took another burst at him, and I smoked him. I don't know whether he went down, but I'm pretty sure he did went down, because he started going towards the ocean. So that's when everything went haywire. So I started picking up, fighting fires, helping out, you know, with whatever I did. And I helped for about maybe 7 or 8 days. And then I got on, they put me on a ship, and I was on my way to Australia.
Well, let me come back to that, because I want to, before we get too far past it, I want to ask you about that time on Oahu, because you described it, and I know you lived it, and you probably tell these stories a few times, but you're a 21-year-old kid, you're on your way to Mass, and all of a sudden, World War II begins for America, and you're right there in the thick of it, and you hop on a machine gun and shoot a Japanese plane. What did this feel like? Because I imagine that's a pretty big shock to your system, that all of a sudden you're at war and the world is crazy. How did you deal with that?
I know it was crazy. So I joined the military for one thing and one thing only, to do what I had to do for my country. And that's what I did.
Was it scary for you in that moment? I mean, this is day one. I mean, you knew maybe something was going to happen at some point, but now it's actually here right in your face.
Yeah, it was scary, but the way I figured, you live at one day at a time, and that's the way it went, you know, all through my military life.
And you said you were helping out for 7 or 8 days in the aftermath of the Japanese attack. And there aren't a whole lot of people left with us anymore that actually saw those things with their own two eyes. What are some of the things that you saw and experienced in those days following the attack that you still remember today, that in when you close your eyes, you can still picture exactly what that looked like?
Well, to me, you know, I still have dreams about that. And those dreams, you know, make you, to me, they make you go on and on, live your life as you want to live it.
Were you around Schofield Barracks cleaning up, or did you go down to the harbor and help with pulling bodies out of the water and all that?
Yes, I went to, I started pulling bodies, limbs, you know, arms, legs, you know, and heads, and it was awful. Thinking about it, you know, it makes me cry. The poor people, innocent people that got caught in a turmoil like that.
And I know there are other moments, because this is just the start of the war and you were in for a while, but when you think back specifically about December 7th, is there part of you that says, yeah, I could have been one of those more than 2,000 that died there?
Yes, I lost a few friends. I lost, especially in Schofield Barracks, I lost a few friends there. And then aboard the USS Arizona, I lost a cousin. His name was William Webb. So when I went back to Pearl Harbor in 1990, I went to the memorial, and there was Japanese people going to the USS Arizona, and they were speaking in Japanese, and they were descendants of the pilots that had bombed Pearl Harbor, because, you know, I had a lot of Japanese friends here before the war. And I learned a little bit about Japanese, you know. I could understand some of it, but not all of it. But they had, you know, people there too, you know, wanted to go see the memorial. And then the memorial, you could still see oil coming out. And I think that'll go on forever, because there's a lot of people that are buried there, you know, underwater.
Is your cousin one of them?
Yes.
And at the time, back in 1941, I'm sure there was some uncertainty at first. You guys didn't know who had survived, who hadn't. When did you find out that your cousin had died, and what did that do to you?
I found out that when after the war, I went to my cousin's, to his mom, her name was Clotilde. She says, I'm very proud of my son. He died a hero. Anyway, that's about all I can remember about him, But getting back to picking up bodies, parts of bodies, taking them, to grave registration. It took a while, to get everything, squared away.
And I know you'd been exposed to a lot through working in the mines and doing your tuna trip to South America and all that. So you'd seen a lot and experienced a lot, but I can't imagine that being easy to see this death and destruction all around you. How did you cope with that? How did you deal with it at the time?
Well, you have to deal with whatever comes along. You have to deal with it, one way or the other. Some people, as a rule, deals like what I went through, they'd go bananas. But I kept my wits, and I'm doing fine as of now, and I'm still doing great.
What's the secret? How do you do that?
You would have to ask me that. I think it's my Indian heritage. As I was growing up, I did a lot of things what the Indians did. And to this day, I still do when I can, believe it or not, I do powwows at Table Mountain Casino here in California. Once in a while, I go to Window Rock, Arizona, because I had some original code talkers in Window Rock, and they're all buried in Fort Defiance, Arizona. And I go there once in a while. You can't drink Corona there anymore.
When I talk to guys who are at Pearl Harbor, and I talk to guys who just served in the war, period, remember Pearl Harbor. I mean, it was three words that seemed to hold a lot of weight for them. For you, as you go on, and we're going to hear some of your adventures in the rest of the war, how big of a motivation was what you had seen and experienced at Pearl Harbor? What did remember Pearl Harbor mean to you?
It meant to me that remember Pearl Harbor, keep on going and give them hell. And that's what we did.
Well, and we're going to find out how you did that and how close you came to not coming home from the war. Wounded on three separate occasions. 94-year-old Frank Paredes of Atwater, California is our guest. And as we head to our first break, let's listen to a little bit of that song that summed up how so many Americans felt after what happened on December 7th, 1941. Hometown Heroes will be back in a moment after you experience a little bit of the Sammy Kay Orchestra and Remember Pearl Harbor.
Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we go to meet the foe. Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we get the Alamo. We will always remember how they died for liberty. Let's remember Pearl Harbor and go on to victory.
You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.